So he began teaching them many things. By this time it was late in the day, so his disciples came to him. "This is a remote place," they said, "and it's already very late. Send the people away so they can go into the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat." But he answered, "That would take more than half a year's wait." But he answered, sorry, "You give them something to eat." They said to him, "That would take more than half a year's wages. Are we to go and spend that much on bread and give it to them to eat?" "How many loaves do you have?" he asked. "Go and see." When they found out, they said, "Five and two fish." Then Jesus told them to make all the people sit down in groups on the green grass. So they sat down in groups of hundreds and fifties, taking the five loaves and the two fish, looking up to heaven. He gave thanks and broke the loaves. Then he gave them to his disciples to distribute to the people. He also divided the two fish among them all. They all ate and were satisfied. And the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces of bread and fish. The number of the men who had eaten was 5,000. This is the word of the Lord.
"The haulers can't get up the gorge. It's too icy."
"Roger that. Over and out."
"Those tracks are dangerous.
And it's steeper around the corner. I'm not sure I'm strong enough to hold you."
"But if everybody gives a little, we'll have a lot. Let's link together."
If everybody gives a little, we shall have a lot. So today we're beginning a new series for the next 4 weeks on generous giving. Now, before you all stand up, run out the door and think, "Oh no, that's 4 weeks of Tim asking me to give money," fear not. That is just one part of being generous. It will come up, of course, but that is just one part of being generous. It's not, of course, the only way. We're going to look over this series at a wider view of what it means to be generous givers, to do just what it says on the screen, to inspire generosity, community, and faith. So this series has been developed following conversations at the PCC a few months ago, where we've discussed the fact we've not actually done anything like this for a long time. And it follows on from the letter that you got on Easter Day asking you to consider your giving and whether it's changed in the last few years, because £10 10 years ago is certainly not £10 today. So that clip that I showed you at the start, just to confuse everybody of why we're having a cartoon in church, is from the children's TV show Chuggington, which, as you can probably guess, Joseph absolutely loves because it's trains. Now, when I was talking to Amanda about the theme of the service, she said, "I know a great clip. You know, in the episode of Chuggington, when this happens, and he says that." No. So Amanda has more knowledge of Chuggington than I do. But it does make the point quite clearly. If we all give a little, we'll have a lot. And that's what we're going to unpack together this morning. The reading that Sue gave us is, of course, very, very well known. The feeding of the 5,000, the five loaves, the two fish in this passage. But what if in this passage we don't think of the blessing of the bread and the awe that there were 12 baskets of food left over? But what if we look at the fact that Jesus was being very unreasonable? Now, before you all go and tell the bishop I'm preaching heresy, let me explain what I'm getting at. Jesus says, "You give them something to eat." You, not me, you. That's quite unreasonable. They say it's going to cost us loads. We're going to have to go into town. We're going to have to bring loads and loads of stuff back to feed 5,000 people. In many ways, Jesus being unreasonable could be an honest assessment of that quote rather than blasphemy or heresy. Consider a similar situation. I stand here this morning and say to you, the congregation, we want to do a project that's going to reach the ends of the earth, and you're all going to go to a different country, and you're going to do it without anything at all. You're just going to get up and go right now. The tickets are out there, named for your plane. You all leave at 4 o'clock from Luton Airport. That's unreasonable. But that is essentially what Jesus is saying to the disciples. You give these people something to eat. 5,000 men plus the women and the children, so there's a lot more than 5,000. I mean, imagine if we were to say, okay, we're going to do a lunch next week and we're going to feed 5,000 people. Could we do it? Could we? Heck, no, we couldn't. We haven't got the facilities. Do we have the funds? Do we have the people? You get the idea. That's the enormity of the miracle that Jesus has done in this reading that Sue read to us today. People are coming forward. You might say, but what are we going to do? I would say to you, well, you handle it. What do I do when I get to the country you've assigned me to? You handle it. It's nothing to do with me. Off you go and do it. Just do it. You'd respond to me going, Tim, have you lost the plot? Are you crazy? And I think that is essentially the tone of this, where the response to the disciples when they hear Jesus say, you give them something to eat. What? Jesus, are you crazy? We can't possibly do that. So perhaps a reasonable person can readily identify with the disciples when Jesus says, you give them something to eat. But what if we step back for a moment? Jesus and his disciples had been engaged in ministry. They'd heard the disheartening news of the cruel death of John the Baptist. They'd withdrawn, perhaps to be with their grief, possibly to compose themselves for the arduous task that lies ahead of them. And Mark tells us they went away in a boat to a deserted place to be by themselves. And suddenly, they had this huge crowd there with no time to think, no time to process. Mark tells us, now many saw them go in and recognized them. They hurried there on foot from all the towns and arrived ahead of them. Sometimes life is like that. It can feel relentless in the journey where things just keep coming and coming and coming. You might look at your diary and think, when on earth am I going to get time to rest? The events and people of life demand of us sometimes. Deal with me. I don't care how tired or how tired you are or how you feel. I want you to deal with me because this is really important. Over the weekend, we had Adrian and Claire Morgan staying with us. And I know the ladies heard Claire speak very powerfully yesterday about her testimony. But as the ladies were having their breakfast here, I was cooking breakfast at home for me, Adrian, and all the children. And he's also a vicar. And we were chatting about the demands of ministry. And more often than not, we find ourselves in a position of dealing with issues relating to the church or an individual before we think about things of our own. Adrian had been on annual leave this week, and he'd had to deal with a couple of significant issues in his parish back home. His wife was frustrated. Is it possible for him to even switch off? She said to me. How do you manage it? And we had a really interesting conversation. Perhaps there are some of us who feel similar. Our families demand all of our attention, so we don't get time to be on our own and process stuff. In this day and age, mobiles have made the situation worse. You send somebody a text message. Half an hour later, you haven't had a reply, so you send an email. Did you get my text? Half an hour later, you haven't had a reply, so you pick the phone up. Goodness me. Use a mobile phone for what it actually is, a phone. Did you get my text? Did you get my email? Yes, I saw it, but I've not responded yet. Oh, well, as you're on the phone, now let's talk about it now. We all know that situation. I had that a few years ago, and it was at 10 o'clock at night, and it was simply somebody saying, I can't find my baptism certificate, and I need it to get confirmed in 3 weeks' time. I said, right, we'll talk about this in the morning. Good night. So I was gracious. It hasn't happened here. and I'm very grateful to each and every one of you. But you get the point. Sometimes the demands on our time can be so extreme, we don't get time to process where we are ourselves. I was once told about a Christian couple who were raising three children, and they're now all grown up, and the husband was a noted lawyer. And he recalled how when his children were young, he'd get home from work, his wife would meet him at the door, place him with a baby in her arms and say, "Here, you take him, I need a moment's peace." He'd mumble something like, "Well, at least let me put my briefcase down." But she wasn't deterred. She gave him the baby. Now, I remember what that was like when Hannah and Joseph were younger. I'd mutter something similar to Amanda as I walked through the door and say, "Here, I need some peace." It's like, "Well, at least let me take my shoes off, love." Fortunately, shoes were tended to be slip-on. But it's the sort of thing that we say to children. At least, and that I say to them now, when we get home from church, "Daddy, can I have a snack?" "Well, at least let me get my shoes off and walk into the kitchen. At least let me put the kettle on. Get our priorities right." Now, whilst these stories are interesting, the point of me sharing them is that it shows a lesson where the gospel intersects with our lives. Jesus and his disciples wanted to retreat and go somewhere quiet and grieve. But the crowd came. The crowd wanted to hear from Jesus. They wanted to hear him teach. They wanted feeding. Perhaps in our lives we know those times when we feel really busy and stressed, but stuff just keeps coming and coming, and it's harder and harder and harder to be gracious in those situations. But that's one of the ways that we can be generous, because we can be generous with our time. Because it might not have been important to me, the baptism certificate that my mate needed, but it was really important to him. And he said, "Okay, as long as you call me in the morning," was the answer. So whilst it might not have been anything, it meant the world to him. So when your family calls you this afternoon and says, "Please can you come and help? I've had this situation," and it may be, "I can't turn the kettle on," or it may be something a lot more serious, how gracious and generous are we going to be in our response? Are we going to go, "No, I need to sit down and rest and watch the last episode of Bake Off"? Or are we going to say, "No worries, I'll hop in the car, I'll be there as soon as I can"? The feeding of the 5,000 is one of the few stories that's reported by all four Gospels. Something important is transmitted in this teaching of Jesus. Because as life gets busy, we rush ahead and we fixate in this passage usually on Jesus blessing and breaking the bread. We revel in the miracle of multiplication and the wonder of how does God provide. But in our haste, in our rush to the end, I think we actually miss a really important point in this passage. And another story now which hopefully makes that point. I don't know where this is from, but I came across it and it makes the point. So I don't know who's to just, I'm not plagiarizing, I don't actually know who to credit. But there was once a mighty warrior, the story goes, mounted on a magnificent horse trotting down a road. Everyone made certain to get out of the way. He noticed, however, directly in his path, in the very middle of the road, a little sparrow. The bird was lying on its back with its feet in the air. The horseman drew in his reins, halted, dismounted, went to the sparrow and said, "Are you dead? And if not, what on earth are you doing in the middle of the road? With your feet in the air?" "No," answered the bird, "I'm not dead. But I heard the sky might fall down, so I'm helping to hold it up." The warrior thundered and shook with laughter, rolled on the ground, slapped his thighs, and at last, after he'd wiped the tears from his eyes, he said, "You silly bird, even if the sky did fall down, what difference could you possibly make with those tiny, spindly little legs?" "Well," explained the sparrow, "you do what you can do. You do what you can do." Generous living begins right there. You do what you can do. Nobody in this congregation can do everything in this church. Even me. I can't do everything. Nobody can do everything. We only do what we can do. And what we do collectively allows us to move forward together. The gospel story tells us the disciples ascertained how much food there was. Jesus takes the food, blesses it, breaks it, gives it back to his disciples. They pass it out to the hungry crowd under Jesus' direction. They did what they could do. Jesus said, "You give them something to eat." They found 5 loaves and 2 fish, and they did something. They did what they could do when Jesus said, "Go and feed them in their groups." In the hands of Jesus, a little is sometimes enough. Take any of our church activities that we run to look at discipleship. Whether it's our giving financially, whether it's our sharing of time and talents, whether it's teaching in Eagles or Little Eagles, helping at the meeting place, volunteering to go out on mission, sharing in pastoral ministry. Faithfulness lives not in genius or great skill, but in simply doing what we can do. In the mystery of faith, when we're engaged in what we can do, we discover Christ's presence and his blessing. Because I'll say it again, in the hands of Jesus, a little is enough. Now, that's not to say we can use it as an excuse to only give a small amount of money when the collection plate comes round or in our monthly giving, because that's contrary to elsewhere in Scripture where we're told we need to give sacrificially. But that's really important. In our own lives, we give sacrificially to the point of doing what we can do, if you take my point. Because even though it may feel small to us, when we multiply it across the congregation, if we all give a little, there'll be a lot. And then the church can function as the church needs to. If we were to read the feeding of the 5,000 in John's Gospel, chapter 6, verse 8 tells us that it's the boy that gave all that he had. He gave sacrificially. To him, he'll have thought, how on earth are 5 loaves and 2 fish going to feed all of these people? He gave a little that he had. He did all that he could do, and Jesus took it, blessed it, multiplied it, and fed all of those hungry people that had come round to gather. So perhaps in our own lives, we sometimes feel like that when we give to the church, in whatever way. Feels like we're giving everything, but it's not making any difference whatsoever. Well, let me tell you, friends, it does make a difference. Whatever you give in whatever way makes a difference. Because when we are all giving sacrificially, when we are giving and doing what we can do, Jesus takes that little that we give. He blesses it. And he turns it into something that we could never have imagined. So if I go back to that comment that I started with, that Jesus was being unreasonable. Actually, when we look at the end of the miracle, Jesus isn't being unreasonable at all. Jesus is teaching his disciples and us to trust in him. Jesus will have known there was enough food to trust, because all he had to do was trust in the Father. Do we know there's enough for us if we trust in our Father? If we look at Scripture, there's so many more miracles and multiplication throughout the Old and the New Testament. I could go on for a while, but I'm not going to. But as we think about giving and being generous, to inspire a generosity, community, and faith, whatever we give in the hands of Jesus is transformed into something more than we could ever imagine. And quite simply, the church wouldn't exist or run without the incredible army of volunteers that make things happen. The church doesn't need clergy leading and speaking. The church needs disciples who are willing to do whatever it takes to bring the kingdom in. It needs an army of volunteers who are willing to go the extra mile to welcome the stranger, the prodigal, the familiar. It needs an army of volunteers to practice the art of hospitality and serve drinks. It needs an army of volunteers to be cleaning toilets, washing dishes, mopping floors, who make the house of God ready for the acts of worship. That's what the church needs. That's what the church is. It's not about those of us that stand here and wear one of these little bits of plastic.
It's about Jesus and about what we can do for him. Without that army of volunteers, the church wouldn't exist. So I want to say thank you. Thank you to each and every one of you who does what you can do to support the mission and ministry of this church. I remember back at college, we'd often be looking at vacancies in the church as a little joke with each other, thinking, I wonder where we're going to end up. And often we found that the parishes were asking for more than what Jesus could give himself. When you look at those profiles, you think, well, that needs Jesus or somebody else even more. And obviously there isn't anybody more. Because what they were looking for was far more than what a mortal human could ever offer. And I think that's one of the issues where we see clergy being busy all the time. There's so much burnout in clergy because that model is simply not sustainable. Because they try and do it all by themselves. And that's why I've said for a while, I want to delegate. I want to release each of you into the gifts that you have, that God has given you, so that you can further the kingdom and we do it together. It's not all about what I do. It's about what we collectively do with our time, with our money, with our service. Because then it's transformed into something beautiful. Jesus says to the disciples, you give them something to eat. They look at each other and think, what's he talking about? Jesus says to the church, go and make disciples of all the nations. Preach the gospel, bring good news to the captives, etc. We look at each other and think, really? We feel safe and comfortable in our church. We don't want to venture out into the world and actually do the stuff we hear about. Yet with Jesus, if we do what we can do, he will transform that into something beautiful. Whether it's helping a stranger outside church, whether it's mentioning the name of Jesus, what have you done? I've been to church. Tell me about it. It might not make a difference. We might never see. But if we do what we can do, Jesus takes that and multiplies it and does more than we can ever imagine. Just as I come to an end, Wendy Pausey has written about this and she sums it up like this as a slide, Calvin, please, thank you. She says, for me, it's clear that God is a master of multiplication, but he likes us to give him something to work with. While we know God can make something out of nothing, he is after all God, he asks for an offering. God is not restricted by numbers, but in his hands, what we have comes alive. In order for that to happen, we need to release it and give it to him. So friends, let's offer what we can so that Jesus can transform it into something bigger. Without each of us giving to the mission and ministry of this church, there wouldn't be a church because it costs money to run. It costs money to reach out to our community. So I want to encourage you now just to take some time to think about whether we are giving it our all, whether we're offering a small amount, whether we're offering sacrificially for the sake of the kingdom. Ask Jesus, what does he want you to give? Because whatever you give, he will multiply and make something beautiful out of it.